Hello and welcome to The Powerful Patient. I'm Joyce Graff, and The Powerful Patient is a series of shows that focus on issues of interest to people with complex medical conditions and disabilities. We have today with us Sarah from Minnesota, who is a chapter chairperson for the VHL Family Alliance, a nonprofit that focuses on people with von Hippel-Lindau disease. Sarah has been willing to take responsibility for heading up the group of patients who live in Minnesota and helping them find each other and find the services that they need in Minnesota. We'll be talking with her today about how to build your healthcare team. Please stay with us now. We'll be right back to speak with Sarah after this message.
This is Keith Richards, aka Just Saying. Is there cancer in your family? There is in mine. But it doesn't have to be bad. We can take action to protect ourselves. I've learned how to get screened and manage my health so that I'll live a long, healthy life. How about you? Visit www.powerfulpatient.org. Again, that's www.powerfulpatient.org. Peace.
So we have with us today Sarah from Minnesota. Why don't you introduce yourself then?
Okay, sure. So I was actually diagnosed myself with VHL, I think officially when I was 21, but I had my first surgery at 17. My mother had it and actually passed away, so through some sort of backtracking, we've figured out more and more about VHL, learned about our family history, put together a family tree, and I guess the way I sort of came into being with the VHL Family Alliance, my family and I got connected with the group, and my predecessor was fantastic. She organized meetings once a year, was a really strong advocate and did a lot of work on behalf of patients with VHL, and she was actually looking to kind of retire from the position, and I stepped up and volunteered, and we already had a really strong core group in Minnesota, so my job was pretty easy, I guess, from that standpoint. What we kind of found in Minnesota is that it's really a good resource for all of us to kind of get together and talk about our common experiences with VHL. We started a physician provider list, and that sort of came out of one of our meetings where we all sat down and said, okay, well, some of us doctor in the same location, some of us don't. What has your experience been with certain
physicians?
This
is just basically sharing the names of physicians that you've found to be very helpful.
Correct, yeah, and we broke it down by specialty. So these are, we actually made the list kind of broad. So it could be someone who you've seen who is a really good physician that you're comfortable with, and it could be someone that you've seen that knows a lot about VHL. So we actually made that distinction on our list. This is a really good general practitioner, a really good internist that will work with you because we found, that's just as important. They may not know or may not have seen a ton of people with VHL, but they can work with you to coordinate your care. So we actually kind of broke the list down that way. So people who, have had good experiences with physicians, but also the physicians that have experience with previous patients with VHL.
And VHL requires a number of different specialists depending on what issues pop up, right?
Correct, yep. So we broke it down into urology, ophthalmology, general practitioners, internists. We have neurology groups on there as well. And then we have, separate healthcare systems. So we have some that are from outlying suburbs further north of, the main Twin Cities area. And then we also have, the Mayo Clinic, which is our, specialty care center here.
Right.
So that's kind of how we approached it. And I think it's been really helpful for people who are maybe looking for a physician and don't know where to start. And I think also our network, not only getting connected with local people who are experiencing what you are, but the websites, the alliance, you know, just ways of feeling more connected to people
right.
have really seemed to be the big theme that I'm hearing.
Right, because when you're looking for care for a rare disease, you may or may not be able to find it in the local area. I mean, you all have Mayo Clinic available, so the probability is that you are going to find the expertise that you require someplace in the state of Minnesota. But that's not always true, and when there's something very rare that comes up, it could be that the physicians even at Mayo may never have seen it before. So it's good
Correct.
To be able to connect with experts in another area and get a little bit more input, maybe have somebody review the scans and give a little coaching to your local doctors.
Yep, that's a good point. And I myself have actually been to Mayo, but ultimately ended up at NIH out east. So it's good to have a local team, but you know, it's totally up to you and your healthcare team where you find sort of the best care for yourself. And
right.
within our Minnesota group, we have people that doctor specifically at Mayo, people that doctor locally, and then people that, you know, go out east as well. So
right.
nobody can really tell you what's best for you except you and your team. So I think that's an important piece to remember as well.
Right, and the NIH is the U.S. National Institutes of Health, where there is one of the largest research undertakings about VHL in the world. It's one of five big research projects on VHL in the world, and so it's one of the expert reference centers that are available to people in the U.S.
Yes, and I've found, you know, people have asked me throughout the years, friends, family, other people with VHL, why I go all the way to NIH. And I think, you know, this is not specifically a plug for NIH. There's plenty of good, you know, healthcare systems. But one thing that appealed to me as a patient was being part of the research in the hopes that what they're learning furthers, you know, our knowledge for future generations as well. So,
right. And by the way, it's a research project only. It's not a hospital in that you can't choose to go there. You can apply for it, but they have to invite you to be part of the research project. So as you say, it's a great contribution. Not only do you get good care for yourself, but you're also making a contribution toward the health and well-being of lots more people with VHL in the future. So thank you for doing that.
Yep, it's our common goal, right?
Absolutely.
Everybody learning more.
Right. Now, you mentioned something very important, and that is building your healthcare team. So how do you recommend that people go about building a healthcare team? Some people say to me, so where do I find this healthcare team? So, no, you get to build one, dear.
Yeah. That's a good question. I think kind of one of the points that someone new to VHL may feel a little bit lost in, where do I begin?
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, having a rare disease can at times be isolating, so having that support and that team is so important. So I think the first and most important or basic step is finding a general practitioner or an internist that can act as your gatekeeper. So regardless of where you know, ultimately, if you have tumors pop up in different areas, you may need to see several different specialists at different times throughout your life. So in order to sort of get the best care for yourself, having someone to facilitate, help with the scans, kind of act as that gatekeeper to know what's going on with all specialties so that, you know, the right hand knows what the left hand is doing, if you will.
Right.
I think that's really important. And my personal general practitioner, at the time I first met him, which was probably 10 years ago, I had seen one other patient with VHL. But he has been there behind me every step of the way. You tell me what you need. You know, it's time for your scans. It's, you know. So I think they don't necessarily have to have firsthand knowledge to work well for you. So I think that's probably the first step.
So when you say gatekeeper, what do you mean exactly by that?
Someone that can kind of keep track of, I mean, ultimately responsibility lies with the patient, the individual with VHL. So I don't wait for my doctor to send me something saying it's time for my scans. You know, I keep track of that. But he's the person that gets the reports from all the specialists. So he knows when I've had a surgery on my kidneys. He knows when I've had a surgery for this. If I need to go see him when I'm at home for pain control or for removal of stitches after a surgery or, you know, management issues, he's there for that.
Right. And yet none of us can really depend on that doctor being proactive and calling you and saying it's time for that scan. I read somewhere that your normal GP has somewhere between 2,500 and 5,000 patients.
That could be, yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, obviously, if he's got 2,500 plus people to keep track of, you know that he's not going to be watching the details for you.
Right, right.
Whereas, you know, you've got one and only body. So, you know, this is
really
your own responsibility, even though this is tricky and most of us don't have any expertise in this. But nonetheless, we can keep calendars and we can try to keep up with what is supposed to happen next.
Yep, I think that's a really important piece because, you know, you have to ultimately be most responsible for yourself. And I think one thing that I've heard feedback from at least our group and from my family, we actually started sort of like our own medical file. So you have copies of the report so that if you go to a doctor and you say, yep, I had that scan, you know, a year ago, you can pull out a copy and say, here's the report. You know, so there's a little bit of organization involved that I think is important, staying on top of your own healthcare, but then also being organized about it.
Right. And those records do belong to the patient now. There is recognition these days that that's true. It didn't used to be the case, by the way. But these days you own that record, and so you can ask for a copy of it.
Correct, yep.
And you should, because doctors move around or change what they're doing. And doctors retire and die, too. You know? So we really need to keep track of our own stuff.
Yep, and if your chart is huge, sometimes they just haven't looked far enough back to notice.
Right, right.
So, yeah, I think, you know, it definitely you taking responsibility is a piece that is so important.
Right. I talked with a patient the other day, and she said she has to deal with her doctor. Whenever they get anything for her, they fax her a copy. Okay. So that's a good deal, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then you need to form that teamwork partnership with your doctor. How do you do that? How do you go about getting that doctor to become part of a team with you?
You know, any new physician that I've seen, I always bring the VHL handbook with me. Because I think as a physician, you know, if they don't know enough about it and they're treating someone, it is up to them to become educated about it, first and foremost. So I think kind of establishing where you're at and, you know, the screening guidelines are in the handbook. So then they're, you know, knowledgeable about what you need, when you need it. And then talking about specialty care, obviously they have an inside knowledge of specialists and who might be best suited for you. So depending on their knowledge base a little bit, because like you mentioned, Joyce, where do you begin? How do I know how to look for a specialist, you know? So getting in a good network, and then, of course, insurance plays a role in that. You know, your insurance dictates kind of where you go. So knowing that you're within your network or who's within your network, and I think that's sort of kind of the foundation of establishing that relationship with them.
So you want to have a friendly relationship and one with respect so that each of you considers the other a valuable member of the team.
Correct. Yeah, that's a good point.
And then, as you say, a good base of information, here's the main game plan that we're both going to follow. And if either one of us notices anything that needs follow-up, we should flag it to the other.
Yep. Absolutely.
Right. And as you say, most of the time stay within your plan for the doctors because obviously there you're going to get the best coverage. But there may be circumstances where no matter where this person is, whether or not they're covered by the plan, you need the very best vascular neurosurgeon to deal with a tricky spinal tumor, for example, or something like that.
Yep, absolutely. So there, you know, as long as you're knowledgeable about that, you know, certainly nobody wants to be surprised by a bill. But yeah, absolutely, there are times when you need to go out of your network. But you know, as long as you kind of know what that's about when you do it, and how to seek out that care, and how to, you know, Mayo Clinic is not really within, that's out of network for most people locally. So knowing that you seek a second opinion, you may pay a little bit higher percentage when you go there. However, like you mentioned, getting the best care, knowing that, you know, a lot of people opt to do that as well.
Right, or at least we need to ask for second opinions, whether they're inside or outside our plan, to make sure that we have the right base of information that we're working from, especially when things get tricky. You know, if it's fairly ordinary, you know, if you're having your appendix out, then any competent surgeon should be able to do it. But when you get into those really tricky areas, you want to make sure you've got the very best advice.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's take a little break here, and we'll be right back to speak some more with Sarah about building your healthcare team.
Von Hippel-Lindau disease, or VHL, is a genetic condition involving abnormal growth of tumors in some parts of the body. VHL occurs in every ethnic group worldwide. At this time, there's no cure, but research is helping those afflicted and their families learn how to manage their disease. When a family member has a tumor, it affects everyone in the family. VHL Alliance works to improve diagnosis, treatment, and the quality of life. Finding tumors early, getting the best treatment, and sharing information with others to help them cope is what VHL Alliance is all about. They're available to help lessen the stress of living with this lifetime chronic disease. Support the Cancer Research Fund of the VHL Alliance at VHL.org. That's Very Happy Life, VHL.org. 1-800-767-4-VHL.
I'm Joyce Graff, and we're speaking with Sarah from Minnesota.
I can think of an individual just whom I know that whose parents were both tested for the VHL gene and do not have it, so he appears to be the first one in the family. He's the only one within our sort of Minnesota network that we know of. And I know that that's kind of a struggle. You know, not only are you, you're kind of the rarest of the rare, if you will. And I think that's when you're trying to trace back a genetic disease and you have a family history and you can kind of put your finger on where and when and how, it makes a little more sense with diagnosis. But I know that's difficult without.
Right, and that's definitely a tricky issue. And it's also emotionally a difficult issue because here you really do feel like a strange bird. You know, you're the oddball in the family even, if you're the only one in the family who has this disease. And it's all brand new to everybody in the family. So it's new to your doctors, it's new to you, it's new to your family, and it makes it particularly hard.
Yeah, and I know it can feel really isolating, and especially, you know, we mentioned being your own advocate as the patient, you know, trying to educate the physicians who are taking care of you can be a really, you know, I don't know if isolating is the right word, but a difficult feeling emotionally. So, yeah, I know that's difficult as well. And personally, I know when I was, you know, I started scanning when I was pretty young. Before I ever had a surgery, I went to see a physician who said, VHL, yeah, that's one of those things that you read about in the textbook and take the test and then forget about it. It's just what you want to hear, you know?
Right.
So I think those are probably challenges that everybody with VHL have come up against or come across in their, you know, battle with it. But
that's right. And there are like 7,000 rare diseases. So that's the case with a large number of rare diseases, that it's hard enough just to get somebody to put the right name on this condition and know
how to deal with the ins and outs of the way this condition behaves.
Yep, absolutely.
Now, one of the problems that I've been seeing is just getting a diagnosis of some of those things that start out with headaches or any of the anomalous sort of abdominal discomforts, you know, bloating and gas and pain in the belly somewhere. And all those kinds of symptoms seem to be taken fairly lightly by a lot of physicians because they're so common. And how do you get the doctor to go a little bit further and find something like a brain tumor or a pancreatic cyst?
Yeah, that's actually a good point. And even once you know that there's something, whether it's, you know, a kidney tumor causing something, a lot of times, like you mentioned, those symptoms are kind of, dismissed, if you will. So I think how do you get the doctor to explore that? I think a little bit of persistence on your part.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely keeping a good handle on where you're at physically, what's the norm and what's not,
mm-hmm.
because really you are your best indicator about how you're feeling and what's normal and what's not. Being persistent, I guess, would be the biggest thing, you know.
Right. You know, the Ovarian Cancer Society came out with some guidelines that said mm-hmm. that before an ovarian cancer gets nasty, it's probably been around for 5 or 10 years, and that there are early warning signs, and it has to do with diarrhea and abdominal pain and bloating and things like that. And I heard one doctor respond to that by saying, that sounds like every woman in my practice.
Exactly, right?
So if you just walk into the doctor's office with a list like that, you're probably not going to get a lot of credibility. But if you go in maybe with a journal that you've been keeping for the last 2 weeks and says, I've noticed that every morning when I get up, the following is true, or every time I eat X, this is true, or, you know, try to make some connections of your own, then you give the doctor a little bit more to chew on.
Right, where you're a little more specific than just, I have abdominal cramping or...
Right.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And with headaches, if it sits in one place, if it's always there, it doesn't go away, that's a different kind of headache than, you know, every time I'm tense, I get a headache, or every time I have my period, I have a headache.
Pop or drink wine or, yeah, exactly.
Right. So just by keeping a journal, you're more informed yourself and you begin to see patterns, but you can also give much more meat to your doctor for them to chew on and really try to come up with a proper diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
It really disturbs me that sometimes it takes almost an act of Congress to get a doctor to do an MRI.
Yeah. It does sometimes, and I think, you know, in our current, the system, we're trying to be careful about costs, and
mm-hmm.
But I think sometimes, like you said, that kind of works, you know, against us in a way.
Right. I have a friend here in Brookline who does not have VHL, and she's been depressed and having headaches and all kinds of things for a long time. You know, she's just a walking black cloud, you know, so... everybody sort of takes her that way, and for the last couple of years, she's been given antidepressants and so forth and so forth. Finally, recently, she had a seizure, and her husband took her to the emergency room, and they finally did the very first MRI and discovered she had a brain tumor the size of a golf ball.
Oh, yeah.
So it would be nice if, you know, how can we make a case for doing that MRI if the doctor's resisting it?
That is a good question.
So as much data as we can give them would be helpful, like we talked about before. Any other?
You know, and I guess maybe this isn't the best solution either, but finding another doctor, you know. I mean, sometimes that's just what it boils down to, but mm-hmm. although, you know, that's maybe not the best solution. And also coming in with, you know, everybody is not necessarily armed with the blueprint of the disease. Like, we can come in with the VHL handbook and say, look, we know that, you know, these are symptoms of X, Y, and Z. But for someone like your friend, that she can't possibly anticipate what the outcome is she's looking for, you know?
Right.
So I guess in that regard, we can, we have screening guidelines. We know the things that we can be looking for, but I guess I wish I knew the answer. How do you convince someone who...
Right. And until you get that umbrella diagnosis, you don't know what the risk factors are.
This is true, yeah.
Right. But one of the things I have noticed is that depression seems to be an all-too-handy diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Or anxiety, or, yeah.
Right, and now that there are all these antidepressants, people get put on antidepressants. And like with her, they gave her antidepressants and it actually made her worse. And that, too, should be a signal. Maybe there's some underlying physical cause, right?
Right, absolutely.
So one thing to remember is that if someone does put you on antidepressants, this needs to be monitored by an MD psychiatrist at least once a month to make sure that you're doing okay on the medication.
Right. These random things can appear from time to time. So although I'm not encouraging you to be dismissive of new lesions, I think it's not necessarily cause for immediate anxiety, worry, or action. You know, although
right.
certainly
right.
anything new is going to cause a little anxiety for anyone.
Right. But so just to put this in context for the wider audience, when they do an MRI these days, they have such good definition in the MRIs that the likelihood is that if they scanned anybody in off the street, they're going to find at least one or two or three little something that looks odd on the MRI. So just the fact that you see some little blip on the MRI does not mean that you need to panic and go into emergency action. It does mean that you need to pursue it and find out more about what it is. But, take it one step at a time.
Right. And I think that's the biggest key to remember is one step at a time. And, I've been dealing with it for years, and I still have to remind myself of that. Personally, I had some kidney issues that they were watching. I went back in 6 months later after experiencing, 6 weeks of bronchitis in the middle of the winter. I went back for my routine checkup, and they found a couple little spots on my lungs.
Mm.
So immediately, of course, the concern was that I had metastatic cancer from my kidneys, even though the tumors there were small and within, guidelines.
Right.
So they said, let's rescan in 3 months and, see if they're still there. I went back in 3 months and they were gone.
Great.
So, like you mentioned, it, little things like that can happen, can pop up.
Right.
And of course, I'm not going to say that I wasn't concerned or worried or I didn't have any anxiety about it. But I think managing that and just kind of knowing one step at a time, this, like you said, technology has gotten so much better that it really is not uncommon to pick up those kind of things.
Right, and to know the profile of the disease that you're working with, once you get the diagnosis, it opens a lot of doors and it really makes a lot of new strategies possible for you. And as you said, with VHL, we know that there can be a number of new primary tumors. They're not necessarily seeds cast by the one tumor. As you say, the kidney tumors can metastasize, can spread to other organs, but when they're small, they're unlikely to do that. So when you see a spot somewhere else in the body, you really have to weigh how likely is it that this is metastatic from the other tumor, or is this just something else that cropped up independently? And the answer to that question is going to be very important in the way you approach the treatment.
Mm-hmm. And I think probably the difficult thing for people is that answer does not come overnight. Usually
right.
involves, a period of time of waiting, of observation, of more scans. So
right.
The one day at a time, I guess, would probably be our motto if we had one.
Right. It used to be that we didn't know this stuff and we would get surprised, and often it was an emergency situation when you get one of those surprises. But you didn't have to worry until you got that surprise. You know, these days, with all this wonderful scanning, we get an early warning. But that does mean that you get to live with the anxiety for a longer period of time.
Yep.
So tell me about that. How do you convince yourself to go one step at a time?
It's probably years of practice, first and foremost, but I think it's definitely easier said than done. And when you get there, you know, you can tell yourself that. But ultimately, the way I sort of handle it is that, you know, I go into each appointment thinking, okay, if this is new information or I'm looking at a surgery, it's not going to be today.
Yeah.
So I can deal with the news I hear today. And then, you know, when I get to the surgery, because, of course, that's, you know, anxiety-provoking for anybody. Yeah, you know, having a good support team around you and being armed with all the education about what you're going into, I think is an important part of it. But also, in part of the support network, not just family and friends, but the VHL support network. For some people who are early on in their process, going and meeting publicly with a, you know, big group of people is not something they can face yet. But, you know, there are two websites, you know, that are a good network as well that are a little more anonymous, if you will, where you can get information. You can talk to people who've been through what you have been through. And I think that's really helpful for me, too, because when I had, you know, the lung lesions I mentioned, of course I was nervous, and of course the first thing I did was hop online to talk to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And talk to several people who had had the same thing, who were very reassuring. So I think it's just, you know, one step at a time.
Right, and especially when you're the only person in your family, you don't have anybody else in the family to discuss it with, so finding other people who've been there, done that, is very helpful.
Yep.
Right. So when somebody says they're nervous about going to a meeting because they're so afraid that they're just going to meet with this bunch of sick people and it's going to be a little downer experience, what would you say to them about that?
Well, I think, you know, one thing that we've tried to do in Minnesota is focus on, you know, let's do like a fun party in the summer where it's everybody brings some food, or we barbecue, or we grill, let, you know, bring the kids, let's have a good time, let's, you know, do something outside. So we're not just, it's not just a support group. We're not just sitting around talking about all the bad things that have happened, but we're sharing about everybody's life and what's going on. So we're connecting on another level besides just VHL, you know. So we're getting to know these people. And I think, you know, if people are nervous about what's going to go on, bring a friend, bring, you know, family, bring support, your support with you.
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. This has really been wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to leave with people who are dealing with some complex disease, may or may not be VHL?
Well, I think if, you know, some of the things we touched on are most important are being your own advocate. You really are the strongest speaker for your own self. You know, keeping detailed information about your health care, about things that you're experiencing, what you're going through, specifics, those are the important piece. And then getting connected with a support network, whatever that means for you. You know, battling any rare disease can be very isolating, emotionally difficult. So I think the more people that you can connect with, whether it's people who are experiencing, you know, exactly what you are, or someone who can just support you emotionally, that's so important. So I guess those are the big things that I would personally suggest and that I've personally found helpful.
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, everyone, for being with us today. Don't forget to go to powerfulpatient.org and pick up the handout that goes with this show. This is 0903, and we hope that you will be well and be a powerful patient. See you next time.